It's Tuesday, the 27th of February, and you're listening to the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host, Paul Hinton, and as ever, I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there, gents.
Hello there, Paul.
Good evening, Paul.
And we're back this week to look at another action-packed week from the Devils with another three games under the belts. We've had a load of Ramite and burning questions that we're going to run through today before previewing, well, another massive weekend. As you said, it's our catchphrase. With the home game against Manchester, and then the small matter of the Challenge Cup final against Belfast. First of all, thank you to everyone who listened last week, as ever, and apologies for the sound quality. We had major technical issues in recording last week's show. It was a bit of a slog, so apologies for anything like that, and hopefully we won't have any of those issues this week. So looking back at the week that was, the Devils travelled to Sheffield, still on their in the fourth of their five-game road stand on Wednesday night. And, you know, it's a place that's always difficult to go, Sean, but Devils made a perfect start just 30 seconds in from Joey Martin.
Yeah, and a brilliant play overall as well. The pass from Mark Richardson in front of the crease was simply sublime. Moose had absolutely no way of tracking the puck. Defence nowhere to be seen on it. And Martin has a basically an open net to just tap it in. Probably one of the easiest goals he's ever scored off a brilliant pass from Richardson. And a perfect start to a place which normally is a struggle for us to go in any case. But midweek is a place where historically we haven't performed. And yeah, good to get one on the board early and set the tone for the game.
Yeah, and it really did set the tone for that first period. It was pretty much one-way traffic. Shots on goal for both teams were pretty low. Devils out shooting Sheffield 7-6, but it felt like all the zone time, all the genuine chances were falling to the Devils, and you know, deservedly doubled our lead just over 8 minutes in with an absolute rocket from Matt Pope from the right-hand side that may have got a slight deflection on the way through, just given the way that it seemed to completely bamboozle Moose. But you know, a brilliant goal, and you know, the Devils kept the pressure up, rounding off an excellent period when Andrew Hotham took advantage of a rebound from Patrick Aslin and just buried the empty puck, buried the puck into the empty net as Moose was still sprawling. Sean, it's something that's always mentioned about Moose is that he's a bit reboundy, and he sort of relies on his defence to pick up those rebounds. And Devils seemed to capitalise quite well on that. And there was another chance in that first period where a high shot seemed to hit him on the shoulder and dropped over his back and landed just wide, but could easily have dropped in the net. He was probably the most rattled I'd seen Moose definitely this season, but possibly ever in Sheffield.
Definitely in Sheffield. I think the second worst performance I've seen him have, the first one being obviously the cup semi-final a couple of weeks back.
Yes.
Overall, though, yeah, we just peppered him. It seemed like we had a lot more shots on that. I'm shocked to read that they were only 7-6 because he was very, very rubbery. And the defence didn't clear anything. They weren't clearing men in front of the crease or high in the slot. We just dominated that first period. We were relentless. We played good, hard Cardiff hockey going to the net, and Chevy just didn't have an answer for us.
Not at all. It was a different first period to the one.
Relentless, yeah, is the word.
It was different to the first period against Sheffield in that Challenge Cup second leg. It wasn't quite the high intensity. You're not going to get that so much in the road. And we didn't need to go out there and score, you know, five more goals than Sheffield. But as you said, it was just relentless. And we said the Moose is rubbery, and you know, potentially there was only seven shots on net. He was just rebounding shots that weren't even on target potentially, because there were definitely more than seven shots on him, but whether they were going on target or not is another matter. First period finished, and you could argue that so did the Devils in terms of, you know, that relentless play, that attacking play. Devils came out in the second a bit more passive, as you'd expect, at 3-0 up with, you know, two games on the weekend to look forward to. And it gave the Steelers some zone time, gave Steelers a lot of possession. Didn't give up a lot of chances, though it is worth saying that there were sort of around the middle of the second period that there were two disallowed goals, probably within about a minute and a half of each other, I think it was, Sean.
Yeah, probably not far off, but both spot on decisions.
First one, a clear kick from Levi Nelson. He almost didn't celebrate at the start, and then I think he tried to buy it from the ref, didn't he?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, well, it looked that way, and the second one's a bit. I thought there was a bit of goaltender interference on bounds, but if not, then it's a kick in motion, and in any case, so the whistle had already gone. But it was a combination of goaltender. It was one of the three: goaltender interference, the whistle already gone, or the kick into the net. And Paul Thompson was adamant that it should have stood in his post game interview, but there were three reasons there why it shouldn't have stood, and all three of them were perfectly applicable to why it didn't. So I'm baffled by his thoughts on that one.
Yeah, obviously he was complaining about the goaltender interference side of it, but even if there wasn't, as you said, puck was kicked in again. And after that second disallowed goal, tempers frayed a little bit. Matt Marquardt threw a glove punch to the face of Tyson Strachan. Strachan just laughed at him pretty much at 3-0 up, as you would. Though Andreas Jamtin wanted to start a fight with Bryce Reddick and looked a lot less keen on the idea when Reddick responded as Reddick always does to a fight opportunity and just dropped the gloves and started throwing and put Jamtin on the floor. You're not a resounding win for him, but you're definitely good to see Reddick stepping up, and I would imagine probably our clear fight leader if stats exist each other.
I was just about to say exactly the same thing. I'm fairly certain that Bryce Reddick leads us in fights at the moment, if you go by his majors. I don't think... Farina hasn't had many fights, so he's a contender. But yeah, wouldn't have thought that Bryce Reddick would be right up there with Farina.
Yeah, Farina, Hotham and Reddick is your three main enforcers there. If you're taking it on fights. I'd imagine Hotham's always there. He's always angry. And that pretty much was the game. 12 and a half minutes in, I can't remember any heart in the mouth moments. Steelers had a couple more power plays after that. Obviously played, but they didn't even bother pulling Moose. I was about to say they obviously pulled Moose in the third period just on an assumption, but they didn't, which is unusual at 3-0, and especially given that they had a lot of zone time, you think use that extra man, try and get one of the goals back. And Devils got their first penalty with 13 seconds left, which by that stage, the game was done. I'd rather it wasn't called and we could have just got out a couple of seconds earlier. But job done, shutout win for the Devils and the first shutout ever for the Cardiff Devils in Sheffield. So, you know, hell of a record given that you've probably played each other, God knows how many times, most seasons since 1991. That's not a bad, it is quite a bad record that we've never shut them out, but, you know, good on this team to be the first ones to get that done.
Just a quick one before you move on. I know you weren't that impressed with the way we played in the second, in the two latter periods.
I changed my mind by the time we got back to Cardiff.
Just your thought. I wanted to get your thought on it, because before we go on to the next.
At the time watching the game, I was like, oh my God, we're giving Sheffield so much time, so much zone time, so much chances. You know, I was texting a couple of updates and saying, it's all Sheffield. But thinking back, and you know, I said, once we were on the bus and I was thinking about the game, Sheffield had the zone time, but they were doing absolutely nothing to break us down. There were, as I said, you could count the clear-cut chances on one hand easily. A few good saves from bounds, but Sheffield offered very, very little. And, you know, my only concern would have been that if you're playing that passively and they get a goal, get a second goal after that quickly, you know, are you able to turn it on quick enough to, you know, to stop the game getting away from you, which I guess is always a concern, but it's one of those things you've got to balance up, and the Devils obviously got it spot on. So, yeah, it wasn't the easiest to watch, but you know, in hindsight, it was the perfect execution of a road trip, especially during a busy period as it is at this time of year.
It is.
Which should have given us loads of energy going into Manchester on Saturday. And just before we get going on it, if I never have to watch another ice hockey game on a small ice pad with poor ice quality, it'll be too soon. I loved the tent back in the day, but my word, what a horrible game of hockey to watch. And I was saying that at the end of the first, when we were 1-0 down, and I felt stupidly confident that we'd come back into the game, but just horrible to watch. No time to set anything up, no nice passing. As soon as the puck's out of one zone, it's in the next zone, and people are crashing nets, they're in the way, there's no passing lanes. I just really didn't like that game of hockey.
Not a place to play pretty hockey at all.
No, but it'd be nice to watch it occasionally, I guess. But you do what you do, and I was quite surprised, Sean, at the lack of physicality from both sides as well, given that, as you said, it's not a pretty hockey place.
Yeah, it was quite flat. I felt like Manchester were going to try and rough it up a bit and, you know, make us realise that we'd come into probably one of the hardest buildings to win in the league. We know ourselves how difficult it is to win in a place like that, having had that for so many years. And they didn't. It wasn't... I can't remember one big hit thrown where I thought, ooh, that's a bit bone-crunching or anything like that. There was no real physicality. And overall, it was quite a dull game. Scrappy, dull, slow, any negative, you know, description you can give of a hockey game, and that's it right there. In a 3-1 game, the only thing that could have made it worse is if it was, you know, a 0-0 and we were still allowed draws.
I'd have taken that over the loss.
Well, overall, yeah, but, you know, just not a good game of hockey to watch. I think even if we won it by one, you know, if we'd won it 1-0, I wouldn't have really enjoyed it. I'd have loved to have won it, but, yeah, for a team like ours who play pretty hockey, play good, fast hockey, it's just not the place to go. And that was, I think, what we struggled with. We didn't lose through lack of trying. We just went there with the wrong game, in my mind. We were trying to, you know, set up in the zone and get a perfect goal, and we didn't try and score anything greasy or get, you know, just shoot on net and get for rebounds. I don't think it was for lack of trying or lack of effort. We just didn't play the right game to win. Manchester got a couple of lucky bounces. I felt like we came out in the third with the mentality of playing that way. And we did that for the first minute and a half, I think it was. And then Bryce Reddick unfortunately gets the puck caught in his skates. And Kieran Long just hits it, loose puck, and it goes over Banner's shoulder, and that's game over. But yeah, weird game. But on balance, when you look at that road trip we've had, that's probably one we can afford to lose based on that result in Sheffield on the Wednesday.
Yeah, definitely works out that way. A couple of things. So the first thing you say, we played the wrong game in Manchester, which I totally agree with. I thought that we could have upped the physicality after the first. I thought we should have been crashing the net, dumping and chasing a bit sooner, playing all the type of hockey that we don't. So it's understandable it doesn't come natural, but we had 8 skaters on the ice who played for us for at least half a season in the Big Blue Tent. We had a head coach, a bench coach, and Luke Piggott on the bench who've played, and two of them have coached us in the Big Blue Tent. I am really surprised that we didn't have a game plan that worked there, Sean. Did you see it as like a bit of a coaching lapse there, or just players not maybe executing?
Well, yeah, I just, like you said, I don't know why we went up there and played that way and tried to play good hockey in a building like that against a team which makes that place so difficult to play by playing the way they do. And we haven't built, you know, we haven't got a team that can win that many games on the small ice, but we've been to Coventry this year and won our games. That's a small pad. I know it's not quite Manchester, but, you know, I
think the other thing is the quality of the ice. The linesman was brushing snow off face-off dots so you could see where to drop the puck. That's how bad the ice was.
Admittedly, you know, full credit to Manchester. They took their chances. They played hard. They took full advantage of the ice. I know both teams have got to play on the ice. They play on it much more regularly than we do. We're used to a pristine surface and all this sort of thing. But it just wasn't. The way we came and played that game, we were never going to win it. And like I said, I don't think we didn't battle. We just played the wrong game.
Yeah, and you know, outshot Storm over 2-1, but you know, a lot of those shots were, as we were getting to the blue line, we were just firing shots on Clemente because we almost didn't know what else to do with the puck. But we weren't then crashing in after it, which you know, may have caused a bit of disruption. You know, catching any rebounds, getting a couple of deflections. It was, yeah, I think the credit to Manchester. Manchester played the perfect home game. You know, we had teams that did it for years in the tent, and Manchester are doing it excellently. So you've got to give them credit. They've taken what they've got, as we did for many years, and they're really making it work for them. And it was nice to see Manchester, as the rink as busy as it was, yeah, in terms of crowds. If they had a match like entertainment that was seemed to be anything after the 1980s, it'd be a really enjoyable experience. But there we go.
It makes you wonder if they've been quite successful this year on their home ice as well. You know, with a crowd that big, and based on the game that we saw, do you think, you know, what's going so well for them to get crowds like that? Because with a bit of luck, they don't. Hopefully, they don't play like that every week. Because you know, you're talking Dave Matos style crowd, you know, appeal. If you're looking at that every week, but you know,
if you look at the penalties,
but other than that, I didn't really see much to go on.
No, the stands, they are winning. They're second in the league. If you look at their penalty minutes, if you look at the bans that they're getting, which isn't always a good sign, I think it's safe to say that the type of hockey they played on Saturday isn't the type of hockey they play every week. They are playing a physical game, I think. And maybe they adapted their game to nullify the Devils somewhat. And you know, if that's the case, then they did it really well. But you know, I don't think that passive, non-physical brand of hockey is what they're serving up every week, based on what you read on social media, what you see their fans say, and you know, what the penalties and bans that Jay Rosehill gets say. And another one today has been issued, but not to Rosehill. He's on a whole weekend without taking a ban, so congratulations to Jay Rosehill. we'll move on to Sunday now. And Devils facing the Giants, and ran out 6-2 victors in the end. Aaron, Devils again made a cracking start, but weren't able to keep it up and let the Giants back in quite quickly.
Yeah, I thought the first couple of minutes we were absolutely unstoppable. Came out hard, played a little bit physical, got some turnovers, and like you scared, like as well, less than a minute in, we are 1-0 up, and I thought, oh, here we go, on fire. And next thing you know, less than two minutes later, they even it up, and I thought personally things got a little bit scrappy. I think we got a little bit lost in our game, and Belfast just beat us up a little bit and pinned us in our own end. And yeah, that was the end of the first. I thought we could have, well, I didn't think we did much wrong. I think Belfast just was riding the wave of confidence after that goal straight after ours and stepped up a little bit. But then in the second period, I think Lord must have said something in the changing rooms, and we come out firing. Within the first 4 minutes, we scored another two goals, and we were just absolutely on fire. Yeah, I don't know, not much else to say. We just outclassed them, outplayed them. Belfast, you know, took a good couple of penalties. They seem to be the same team every time. They're always very chippy towards the refs, and their coach never likes things when they don't go their way. But, you know, when's that another case in the Elite League?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Giants didn't seem to offer much, but Sean, I thought after the Giants equaliser, Devils, as Aaron said, Belfast were able to exert a little bit of pressure, but Devils seemed to lose their head a little bit, and that two-minute spell at the start, Devils seemed to lose a lot of confidence, but once they picked it back up, Giants didn't really have an answer at all for us today.
No, they didn't. I just want to point out that goal from Matt Toe was a great shot as well. Good fourth line goal for him to get him back in the game. But yeah, I thought we came out in the first. We were okay. But the second was very, very good. It was really impressive to get a lead like that. And then, and I think when the when the fourth one went in, that was it, basically. I was a bit disappointed with the Shield's goal, obviously. I felt really bad for Gleeson Fournier, actually, because it was the one mistake that he made all game. And just the play then happened to turn into a goal off a turnover. So that was disappointing, but, you know, it happens. And I was still happy going into the second period break with a 2-goal lead. I felt we'd done enough to probably, you know, see the game out and take the W on that one.
Yeah, and after Joey Haddad was awarded and had a penalty shot and had it saved by Jackson Whistle, he, I think a minute or so later, got his own back, if you like, and you know, scored a goal, ripping past him to restore the 3-goal lead before Matt Pope scored an empty netter with just under two minutes left from his own half. A 6-2 win, and quite as Aaron said, the Giants were quite chippy. Did you think, Aaron, whilst they were chippy, there was an element of restraint there, possibly with an eye on the final coming up on Sunday?
No, I don't really think they held back at all. I recall Matt Pope losing his rag a little bit towards, I think it was the end of the second period. And I couldn't see what happened, but as they was coming around the back of the net, it looked like Pope's stick was caught in between Connolly's legs. Between Connolly's legs, Connolly went over, and then next thing you know, Blair Riley comes shooting in and takes a really stupid 2-minute penalty. Yeah, we didn't capitalise on it, but what a ridiculous penalty it was.
I did agree with the penalty that Riley took.
No doubt.
Oh no, I agreed with Riley doing it. There had been a hit on Pope right up in the devil's end from Connolly, where he left his feet a little bit in the hit. It was very late, and Pope took exception to it and chased him the length of the ice. And even before they started going behind the net, was pulling at him, sort of pushing at him, you know, making out that he wanted to start a fight, and then his stick got wrapped up and was still looking like he wanted to go. And, you know, I think if that had been someone doing that to, I was going to say Bryce Reddick, but he's our enforcer now, if that had been someone doing it to Sean Bentivoglio and Justin Farina was on the ice, I'd have expected Farina to come in and throw a punch and just defend it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but I think for a top line forward when you're 4-1 down or whatever it was, I think it's a bit silly penalty to take. I do think that Blair Riley as a captain doesn't really do a lot for Belfast. He makes a lot of stupid decisions, and you know that could have evidence. Well, it did cost them in the end, but we didn't score off it. But I think if they're gonna play hockey like that, you only can judge on people who's on the ice, really. But you know, like, when it happens to us, I can recall, I think it was Benty taking a niggle in front of the Belfast bench, I think it was. And, you know, Martin or Hotham or anyone didn't step in and throw punches. You know, they just got in between. It was like, try and leave it, don't take a penalty. But, you know, it's different mentalities in different teams. I think Belfast are an aggressive team and, you know, pay dividends when they take penalties like that.
That's a good point. And so the point about Blair Riley being one of their top players, I think when your toughness is on your top lines, maybe it can be a little bit more difficult to balance. I suppose if Farina takes that penalty as a third liner, you probably don't notice it as much.
Because I'm not sure how they penalty kill it. I can't really remember their lines, but I would expect, well, he might not be, but Riley could be a penalty killer, or, you know, and then, you know, he's sitting for 2 minutes while they're on penalty kill. And, you know, if we scored on that, well, he is to blame if we did score on that. But, you know, I just thought it was a bit silly. And I would have been a little bit peed off if one of our players, the likes of Bentivoglio or Joey Martin or Jake Morissette did something like that, you know, a top scorer who can contribute on the penalty kill as well. If they did something like that, I would be a little bit peed off, but I can see where you're coming from, whereas I would want someone to respond.
I got to say, I don't think Matt Pope was far away from taking a penalty himself. I think if Connolly had slowed up a little bit more, Pope probably would have taken a ref in or an interference penalty. He was quite agitated. And
yeah.
It was like, you know, he didn't take the penalty, and you know, following that, he did throw a couple of hits in the third. I think just to let him know that they're not going to get away with throwing those late hits. And you know, that's how I'd rather see the players dealing with it rather than taking silly penalties. So that was good to see. A good night for the Devils, obviously, with a win. And a good night for the Devils around the league as well, with Guildford beating Manchester and Sheffield comfortably beating 8-1 in the end, with Fife starting netminder Andy Isles going off after just over a minute, and with the score at 1-0 Sheffield. So, you know, quite a change there once the netminder changed, and you know, Fife are going to be hoping that he's fit and fit quickly, because obviously with the run in and the number of games they've got, they're not going to want to be relying solely on their backup netminder. Those results also mean that even the Devils lost on Saturday, it was the equivalent of a 4-point weekend, with all of our only two title rivals now mathematically, both dropping 2 points and us picking two up. So a decent weekend all round. And following on from a win in Sheffield on Wednesday as well, I think everyone in the Devils would have taken that before the week started. So that was the week, and it's time to choose the player of it. Sean, who's going to get your vote?
Patrick Allen, Aslin, first, second and third.
Patrick Aslin gets yours. Aaron, who's your pick?
I agree with Alan, but I'm going to say for me it was Joey Haddad. I'm just basing it on Sunday's game. You know, he got a penalty, won the penalty shot, scuffed it a little bit, and then scored an absolute bullet after that, within 2 minutes of that. And I was really excited by that one. I made a mess, but yeah, Joey Haddad for me.
Because you had a drink in your hand and you spilt it when you jumped up.
We've
got a winner, and it's Patrick Aslin. I thought he was exceptional on Saturday and Sunday. He was one of the few players in Manchester that I thought stood out. As you said, it wasn't necessarily a terrible performance, just the wrong systems, but Aslin really seemed to be putting the team on his back at times and driving the puck in deep. He probably made nearly all of our chances and got rewarded with that goal very late on. And then a 3-point night against Belfast.
With a magnet on, stick with the puck.
Yeah. And yeah, we've had a few discussions. Well, I think we've probably done both sides of it this season, how he did start very slowly and how he's been coming into form. And, you know, this is Patrick Aslin playing at, you know, sort of the very highest level. I think I've seen Patrick Aslin play. He has been at that good this weekend, and you know, if he carries it on for the rest of the season, we'll be very happy, and we probably won't be far away in many of the games that we play, because you know, he is that difference-making type of player. So congratulations to Patrick Aslin on Player of the Week, and we are going to social media, Sean, so fire up the computer, because we've had a lot of interactions this week, and I think if we start with Aramite suggestions, we've had a few of those in, Sean.
Yeah, we had 5 Aramites this week. Many thanks to everyone for sending them in. We do love receiving them. It's also really good to see the conversation that people have with each other based on their Aramite submissions as well. So that was really good to see. Thank you for letting us know your submissions. We had Kenwyn Jones, who said, "Ram, I'd love that weather permitting. We're visiting this Friday to take in the Storm game, and hate that this will probably be our last home game this season." Jonathan Williams, "Ram, I'd hated Clemente having the skill of not being able to attempt a save without kicking the net off and getting called. And not getting called. And when not doing that, he was taking a constant breather, taking his lid off." Claire Millard, "Love Tyson Strachan's reaction in Sheffield. Straight after getting punched in front of the net, he was trying to get to Reddick, who was starting with Yampton, but Reddick already had it covered." And Haley said she hated watching the Devils play on the small pad in Manchester. She doesn't know how she enjoyed hockey for so long in the BBT. And added an additional Ramite to that. It's a perpetually repeated Ramite is her mega dislike for Jay Rosa, which I think we all share. So thank you for passing those on to us. We also had a number of burning questions. The first one comes from Anthony Edwards, who said, do you think that having the four-man system has improved the officiating throughout the league? Some of the calls recently have been unbelievable, and I don't see much improvement, if any. Aaron, do you want to go first on that one?
I think it's that's quite absurd. I don't know what decisions you're referring to in the Town Hall report, but if we could just go off most recent home game Sunday, I didn't think many calls that were made were wrong. For me, I think what I could take from the referee's decisions on the weekend was that I think Smith was trying to let it go a little bit more, whereas Hicks was willing to call, and I could see a little bit of conflict there, but I think that's just because you've got two refs who sometimes play a different refereeing style. I don't disagree with any of the calls. There's not many calls that I've disagreed with since the four man system has taken over. So if I'm honest, I don't really see where you're coming from on that. If you want to point out some decisions, I'm sure we can discuss them, but I really do think the referee's not, it maybe not so much improved in a way, but I think it makes the game more fairer, whereas calls that should be made are being made, and like some decisions, like, you know, when a goal goes to the goal line technology review, you have, you know, you've got two people who confer instead of one person making a decision, which two is always going to be better than one. And say, like, things, I think that's what is good for me. Like, you've always got two people who can confer and think, yeah, this is a good call, no, this is a bad call. So I never think it's a bad thing to, you know, have two refs on the ice. Yeah, it takes up a little bit more space, but I think it's a brilliant idea, and I'm glad we've done it. You know, I think we were one of the only leagues in the world that still had the three-man system up until Christmas time. So I think that we finally caught up with the times, and it's going to benefit our players and hopefully the teams.
I'd agree with that. I think the other, I definitely do agree with that. I think it's been a positive move. I think, as Aaron said, you do get the contrasting styles at times. But the thing I think is probably stopped the most for me is the off the puck incidents. Thinking back to the Belfast games earlier in the season, I just remember being so frustrated by the, as the play was going the other way, you know, the little slashes, the little cross checks, and then the reaction would inevitably get called, or just, it would just carry on. That didn't seem to happen as much, and it could be that Belfast have just changed the way they play, or it could be, and I think it more likely is that there's a referee on that end of the ice looking at what's going on, and you're not getting away with it. And it's, that's the type of stuff that I don't want to see in the game. I don't want to see that off the puck stuff, the niggly little things that slow play up, that make you call the retaliation penalties and just break the flow of the play up when the puck's not even anywhere near it. And yeah, I think it has eliminated that. I think there was a spell where there were a lot more penalties being called, but again, I think that was the player's fault, not the ref's fault. That they were still trying to play like they were three men and they were getting pinged for it. And I think people are starting to learn now. So the one thing I would say that I think has gotten a little bit worse, which is probably understandable, given that some have stepped up to be refs. I think in some games, I think the quality of the linesman has dropped. I think offsides and icing calls seem to be a bit more haphazard at the moment. And I find myself disagreeing with a lot more than I have done in a long time, but you know, as is the nature of anything, if you've got a new linesman there will be mistakes made. And we've had to have new linesmen to accommodate guys like Matt Rose stepping up to having the orange armbands. But yeah, overall, I agree with Aaron. It's definitely a positive thing for the league. And yeah, it'll only get better as, you know, the refs get more games under the belt playing the four-man system, and you have off-season. And when they do their training camps this year, it'll be tailored to that, obviously. So yeah, I think it's a good thing. And yeah, I can't think of any decisions off the top of my head that I think are ridiculous that wouldn't have happened with the three-man system.
I think that thing you mentioned about the off-the-puck stuff is the major thing. I think the fact you have got that fourth man is, it's more of a, the you know, of a deterrent to not do that sort of thing, if you get what I mean. So it didn't even go on. He's not getting penalised because it's just point blank not happening because the players know it'll get penalised. That's just my view, and I think that's what the four-man system does brilliantly. Another thing you look at, just take Wednesday for an example, where Sheffield had two goals disallowed for distinct kick emotions. You know, if for whatever reason the Devils had lost their timeout due to, you know, taking the timeout on the change, on a long change on the ice in, for example, and there's not a referee in place to see that puck being kicked in because he can't keep up with the play, that is another real sort of point where I think that the four-man system shines, is, you know, you've got someone at wherever the play is going on at all times, and then you've got someone shadowing it from the back, watching for all that off the puck, in all those off the puck incidents as well. So I think it took a bit of time, like you said Paul, because players were trying to play with a three-man system, they were getting more penalties. But I think overall it's where the game has been for so long now, and the Elite League has finally caught up, and it's only going to get better as we keep into it. Okay. Second one comes from Neil Westlake. We've actually got two from him. Should netminders be called for the delay of game when they continue to kick the net off, e.g. Clemente, even if it is a bloody awful rink with a crappy ice pad? Paul, you first on this one.
I think the answer is obviously yes, if it's deliberate. I do have some, and it could get me lynched if I didn't say it on Saturday, because I think it would have. I did have some sympathy with Mike Clemente. He is bad at it. He does do it a lot. There was almost zero moorings on the bottom of that net, because as they lifted up at the one stage, I think if it was an inch, that was probably an exaggeration that was sticking into the ice. And some goalies are side-to-side goalies and push off the post. It is just their style. And Clemente is that style of goalie. I thought three of the four were genuine accidents. There was one where he just got a bit out of position. He kicked it backwards. So he should have had a delay game penalty on that one. But, you know, I think the nets were that bad that the refs were giving him some leeway on it. But, yeah, obviously you do want to see it, but it will happen from time to time. And I think it was only four. I just think because it was Mike Clemente, it was a bit more magnified, because he has got form and a reputation for doing it. But yeah, that's my point of view on it.
I think that's the same. He did get called for it once last year, from my recollection, and I was the same as yourself. Paul, there was not a lot of, you know, scope for him to, play his game off those posts, and it must be incredibly frustrating. The only thing I will say, and it probably isn't the case because we don't have one of those styles, is Ben Bounds didn't knock it off from memory at all.
I don't really recall ever seeing Bounds playing like a side to side off the posts.
That's the point I was making. So the argument of Bounds did, oh well, Bounds didn't do it, Bounds didn't do it, Bounds didn't do it, is, you know, I guess
that's what I mean, point, because he wouldn't do it because he doesn't play that way.
Yeah, in a way, yeah. But then, like you said, Paul, the one where he pushed it directly off behind him, I think possibly should have been called. But I
shouted for every single one of those, because as you mentioned,
there
was one given last year against Clemente that I didn't think in a million years was a penalty, but it was the ref was right in front of the Devils fans for about three in a row. And every time the block erupted, and on the third one, the ref just put his arm in the air. And I just work on the basis that if you shout at the referee for something enough, you'll put his arm in the air. And it worked last year, it didn't work this time. It's obviously frustrating to watch, and obviously made a feature into the Ramite as well from John Williams, who, Clemente taking his helmet off and waving out his hair and having to look at his stupid moustache as he took a water break after every time the puck was covered was a lot more irritating for me. I don't think you can give a delay a game for it, but I really didn't like that either.
I don't think you can, you know, get away with that.
I think it was just a stupid moustache that was annoying me more.
Yeah, probably. Aaron, disagree with anything, or?
No, I think what you said basically covers it. You know, there's a lot of different goalkeeper styles, and you know, he's a big guy, and if the Morin's then setting the ground properly, then, you know, when he's pushing off the post, it's going to come loose and it's going to come off. I don't recall him ever doing it when he comes down to us that often. I think that's probably because our Morin's are a little bit deeper and they stick more. But, you know, Brian Stewart had the same problem when he came to the tent. It's all the way the goalies play. If you're going to push off the post with no Morin's, then it's going to come off. But I can't judge because I wasn't there. But I've never really seen a problem with Clemente at home game. So that's my input.
Okay. Neil Westlake's second question was, who do you think has been our best D pair in the season? Richardson and Hotham or Strachan and Reddick? Obviously, not a love for Gason Fournier. Bit of a grudge there from Neil Westlake, but we won't hold that against him.
Fournier is probably still there to develop a pairing, to be fair to him, with Palace.
No, I know. I was only teasing. Aaron, do you want to go first on that one?
That one's a tough one for me because I think both pairings offer different things. I think going forward, Richie and Hotham are probably the best D pairing in the league, but I do think that but then again, Reddick and Strachan both have really good transitions and garrison the offensive zone quite well too. For me, it's probably Richie and Hotham because they probably, I've seen them play the most and they are the most consistent D pairing. I do like the way that if Hotham makes a mistake, Richie is there usually to cover him, and you know the way they play is if one goes forward, one usually sits back. It's usually Hotham going forward and Richie sitting back and covering. But with Reddick and Strachan, I do kind of see them as similar players. I think they are both really good at like positioning. Reddick not so much at the beginning of the year, but since then, he's really been good at positioning and he doesn't push too hard for the puck. I think if he sees an opportunity, he will. And it's the same for Strachan. If he sees an opportunity, he'll go. And they both know they'll cover each other. So I don't really see an issue with that. But I think because they're two similar players, you probably could split them up and put them with other players. Like maybe Strachan and Fournier could be a good one because Strachan is really defensively minded and Fournier is offensive, so you've got kind of the same things going on with Richie and Hotham. But I think since you've put Reddick and Strachan together, they've both seemed to strive off each other and play brilliantly. So I don't think I could pick one, because I think all three of our deep pairings are, well, especially like Paris since Belfast weekend has been, I think he's really been decent and not many mistakes as he was making. So I think all three of our deep pairings are decent. We do give up the odd man rush that we concede on, but we're top of the league for a reason, so we must have six good D-men, so.
Fair point. Paul?
I think Aaron's made the point that it's quite difficult. They're obviously different D-lines, you know, Richardson and Hotham. Our first line D, they get first line D minutes, they get first line D opportunities everywhere, whereas Strachan and Reddick aren't and don't, but do their jobs, which are different, equally as well. I think, you know, if you're looking over the season, you know, Matt Richardson, Andrew Hotham, it's probably the best D pair in the elite league has seen, given now the number of years that they've played together and the impact that they've had every year when they've done it. So it's Richardson Hotham for me for that, but the Strachan and Reddick partnership is brilliant. And I think sort of the real marker of how good a player Tyson Strachan is how good a player Bryce Reddick is now compared to the start of the year with his positioning and, you know, a few issues that he was having, but he settled and he looks twice the player he did at the start of the season. And I think Tyson Strachan gets a lot for that for me.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant way to look at it. And I think Aaron nailed it on the head when he said we're top of the league for a reason because we've got six good D-men. I actually think we've got seven when obviously Matthews is on the line, but when he's been there, he's been solid.
Only ever six at one time though. That's what I was trying.
Of course. The big thing for me, Paul, like you said about Tyson Strachan, is how much calmness he's brought to Reddick's game, and it is difficult to say because of the two styles. I think that Strachan's getting a couple more opportunities to play a bit of a more offensive role as well now. Whereas before when we would only really activate our D when Hotham and Richardson were on the ice, we're starting to do it now when Redick and Strachan are out there, and like I really like to see that side of it. But I think Tyson Strachan is the perfect example of what you want in a defenseman when you sign him. He's a big guy, very smooth skater, calm, composed, and can pick out a pass really well as well. Some of the long stretch passes he's made in the last, couple of months since he's been here have been fantastic. And yeah, I think that we've really, really benefited from having him in, as has Bryce Redick. Just moving on to our next question now from Dan Acton. His burning question, funnily enough, is how do we keep Tyson Strachan for at least another season? Since joining our D, he's been pretty solid overall. Paul, I'm going to go to you first on this one.
I think plain and simply,
how do we keep Tyson Strachan for another year?
I'm going to follow up with another question, but just off the back of Dan's question, there was a bit of a conversation went on between a few people, say, and you could really see the love for Tyson Strachan in the fan base, which is good to see, because I think it took a little bit of time for a lot of people to recognise it. And as is always the way with a stay-at-home D-man, they don't do anything flash as such, and it's the lack of mistakes. So it's good to see. How we keep him, I'd imagine, with a fair whack of money. I can't imagine he's cheap. He's with the pedigree that he's got, he came in just after the season started, so the options were probably a little bit more limited. So yeah, he seems settled. He seems happy on the ice. He's not playing like someone who doesn't want to be here. So hopefully he's enjoying his time in Cardiff. You always hear good things about people's opinions of Cardiff when they're here. So we've got that on our side as well, and potentially that'll sway him. I'm going to change the question slightly and ask, would we want to keep Tyson Strachan? And it's a bit of a hypothetical one, in that assuming he's on a decent sized wage, he is effectively a stay-at-home D-man. We're seeing a little bit more offense from him now. But he doesn't produce a lot on that side of it. Sean, for you, is it worth... we've already talked about the impact he's had on Redick. Does all of that and everything that he brings, is that enough if he is one of the higher earners, given that the role that he's currently filling for the team?
Now you're asking. We need to do whatever it takes to keep Tyson Strachan here. In my eyes, I think he's just been a breath of fresh air on and off the ice. You hear so many good things about him and the work that he does in the community as well. So, we've got to do whatever it takes, basically.
Aaron, have you got another way that we can keep him? And do you think that we should do, based on the hypothetical that I've posed?
I would like to see him return, but I think it's all dependent on the wage he would be taken away from the club. Come in next season, there's going to be a few of forwards and possibly D that's going to leave our club. We're going to have to replace him. So I wouldn't like a player like, I think we could probably get more for our buck if he is on that high wage. But I think he's fantastic. I think since he's came in, he's made a hell of a difference. Before he was playing for us, we was a little bit sloppy in the back end, a lot of turnovers, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's where we had our worst period of the season. Things weren't going well. We were still winning games, but we were also losing. I think we lost like 3 on the bounce or something like that. And since he's came in and found his feet, I think the team has been completely different. He's kept us grounded, mistakes are less frequent. He's chipped in on the power play when we're up a couple on the penalty kill. You know, he's solid as a rock. So I think to not offer him a deal would be silly. But I think we shouldn't chuck all our chips in one pot and expecting, like, you know, going full hell for leather for him. And whereas they probably are, like, cheaper stay-at-home D-men out there that probably could do the same job. I think because of the league we're from, you know, we're small fish in a big pond, so I think we could, you know, there's loads of leagues we can poach from to find players of his stature, so he's not hard to replace, but I wouldn't like to see him replaced. It's all about the money for me. Like, if he's going to be one of our highest paid players, I would expect a little bit more in points production from him, because I think he's not put up many points this year. So yeah, I just, if we're going to pay him a lot and keep him, I'd expect more.
It was a hypothetical, and you know, to answer my own question, yeah, I wouldn't expect him to be in the top handful of earners, and you know, he may not be now, but I would like to see us keep him, and I'd like to see us go hard to keep him, obviously within, you know, a wage structure that's sensible, which it, you know, would apply to any player in our league. I think what he's offered this year is really good. So, yeah, just thought I'd tag that onto the end of the question just to make life a little bit more difficult and spring it on you. We've got another couple, I think, Sean?
Yeah. Okay, so we had two from Jason Manley. His first one was, first name on the re-sign sheet for next season, 24, 33 and 88 notwithstanding, as they are obvious, so Hotham, Bounds and Martin. Aaron, first re-signing for next year.
Oh, Christ. Going off this season's before, I can't pick one.
Just say that Jason has asked the question totally wrong. You forgot to exclude number 17, because the first name every off-season should be Mark. So.
There's too many. I think Craig Moore, because I think when he was here, he offered loads and he's still progressing. You got Justin Farina, who's been an absolute killer for us, both scoring and in, you know, the way he plays. Joey Haddad, yet another stellar season. Sean Bentivoglio is having an absolute blinder. You know, Jake Morissette even had a good start to the year. I think since he's been swapped with Joey Haddad, his production has dropped a little bit, but I still think he's had a great year.
Because
I think Joey Haddad is pretty much a given. I'd say Sean Bentivoglio, he's been absolutely, like, last year, you know, his points were great. We did have a little bit of a grind. Well, I had a grind on him last year. I didn't think he was as good as he was, and I wasn't too obsessed if he didn't come back. But this year, it's like a new lease of life. It's like he's 5-10 years younger, and some of the goals we've scored this year is solely from him going hard for the puck, turning over and scoring on. So for me, it's Sean Bentivoglio. I think, you know, that grind he brings to this team is second to none.
I feel like Mark Richardson's a bit of a cop out answer. Mark Richardson, Matthew Myers, for me, have got to be there because you need your core Brits, so almost think we should discount those. I'm going to say Gleeson Fournier. The year he's had this year has been outstanding. I don't know how long Andrew Hotham is going to be here. He's obviously now a few years in, and Fournier for me is a first line D just waiting to happen. And the way he skates, that he's cut out the errors that he seemed to have a few of last season. Obviously they still happen, but they're a lot less. He's playing a little bit more of a composed game, and some of the goals he scored this year have been unreal. But I think Fournier has been one of the best players, you know, consistently through the year for us this year. But as you know, Aaron listed players, and I could list another three or four that I'd want to see back that he didn't even mention. But you know, Jason's been harsh, said one, and I'm going to say Gleeson Fournier. Sean?
I feel like I'm stealing your answer because I completely agree with everything you've just said. For me, Fournier's still very young. He's only going to get better. He skates like the wind. He's calm defensively. Scores some absolutely brilliant goals. He's got a great release. Overall, I think in terms of who is going to be hardest to keep or hardest to replace, I think that Fournier is right up there. So that's going to be my one as well. I'm sorry to steal it, but I totally agree with everything you said.
It's not unusual for people to massively agree with me, so I don't get offended by it.
Well,
I didn't realise how young Gleeson Fournier was. I just looked at it when you said he's 26. I don't know why. In my head, he was older than that.
Yeah. So, you know, best years ahead of him. 27, 28 next year. Best ones. the second part of Jason's question was, first name on the poach from another team sheet for next season. Aaron, you go first on that one.
I've just scouted through the Elite League page and who I thought have impressed me this year. I think Sebastian Sylvester from Belfast is a good shout. You know, he's put up a good number of goals and points, but the only thing that lets me down is penalties and the power plays he gives up. You know, he gives two up against us on the weekend. So I think if any coach can simmer him down a little bit, it would be Andrew Lord, and I think Andrew Lord probably could get more out of him than Keith could, just purely on experience of coaching. You know, Lord's been doing it for 4 years now. Keith's only in his first year. So yeah, Sylvester for me, I think he's class, and I think, you know, I'm not saying Ulmer's on his way out, but 37 years old, he's had a stellar season, no doubt. My favourite player. But, you know, he's on his way out, and I think Sylvester could slot in right into his position. You know, he's good on the draw, and he puts up the points. As long as we can keep him out of the bin, then them two swapping wouldn't be an issue for me.
Do you want to go?
No, you go first. I'm answering the questions now.
If we're playing fantasy hockey, the first person I would sign would be Jackson Whistle, and have him back up for Ben Bounds as an under 23 Brit, and bring in another over 23 Brit as well. But obviously Jackson Whistle isn't going to do that. It's difficult. I sort of feel like the one player that we didn't replace this year, and we're top of the league by 10 points. And I've had the argument on Twitter with a couple of people. We haven't made mistakes in re-signings, but we didn't replace Doucette last year as like your go-to goal scorer. Sort of Matt Pope almost seemed to be that guy, but that's not Matt Pope's game, and Matt Pope brings loads. So I sort of was looking at a goal scorer, and sort of the Manchester players are the ones that jump out to you, with Luke Moffat and Mike Hammond both right up there. But the one I'm going to go for is Matt Becker. I couldn't stand him when he plays the play, Ed.
You're taking all my answers.
I'm stealing your answer. I gave you the option to go first, and I don't look like the copier. but I hated him in Bray, Ed. I haven't noticed him quite as much in Manchester as being an annoyance. But this year he's shown that he can put the points up. 21 goals, 41 assists in 48 games, and he's only taken 12 minutes, which, you know, for the agitating style of play that he is, that's, you know, a really good return. You think that type of player, you're writing off 30, 40 minutes easy, and anything under that is a bonus. So he's well under that. And yeah, Sean, do you want to say Matt Becker as well then?
I do, but no, I don't. okay, to throw it out there. I'm going to go with John Dunbar. 71 points, 20 goals, 51 assists. I got pure goal scorer. Pops up, plays really well on the power play. Overall, I really like his game. That's just because you stole Matt Becker. Thanks for that.
you had the option to go first, so
Luke Moffat was an option as well, but you also pointed him out, and again, I look like a copier. So.
I'm just going to say as many names as I can before you, just to annoy you.
I'm going to sit here and sulk and let you carry on with the rest of the show. But thank you to everyone for submitting your burning questions and Ramesh. We love having so many from you. It gives us much more to talk about, and we really enjoy doing it.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. So all that's left is for us to preview just a small weekend, you know, an average weekend in the life of a Devils fan. A first versus second game on Friday and a cup final on Sunday. Manchester come to town, and I think it's safe to say the Devils are going to be looking for a reaction to the defeat on Saturday. Storm are going to be an import down. Luke Bakker, who had a little bit of fisticuffs with Andrew Hotham at the end of the game, will be missing after getting a 2-game ban from an incident in the Guildford game on Sunday. And the one other thing from that for that game is that Andrew Lord has called the fans out, saying it was too quiet on Sunday. Sort of feel like the fans have had about as much of a rollicking as the players have had this season. But we didn't talk about it. Let's talk about it very quickly. Aaron, what's your opinion on that? The coach calling the crowd out like that.
Like you said, Paul, I think some of the performances this year, a couple of performances that we've had, there's been pretty much little to no response, and I feel like crowds haven't been great and atmosphere haven't been going well, but Christ almighty, did he go ham on us as fans, not just us three, but as fans. He didn't hold back. He said how he felt. And I did find it quite funny, purely because you don't see Andrew Lord say things like that. He's usually quite an upbeat person, but he just went at it, and maybe that's how he gets the players going in the dressing room, tells them straight, and they come out. Then next thing we're 3 or 4 goals up, and next thing on Sunday we could be, blowing the roof off the roof of the rink. He has that kind of, the way he says things, it sticks in your mind. So I can't see Sunday. It's not Sunday, sorry. Friday being a quiet game. No, go on. It's okay.
I should say he definitely put that marker down. And Sean, it wasn't that quiet on Sunday, and it was a bit of a flat game. Giants really struggled to live with the Devils. It felt quite comfortable on the ice most of the time. And those types of games, you're the guy with the drum trying to get the atmosphere going a lot of the time. So games where it feels comfortable on the ice, not always the easiest to get things going off the ice.
Yeah, trying to get stuff going, you gauge when it is getting a bit quiet, and you do try and do a bit. I think it was loud in spells. It just struggled to get going constantly. There was no consistency to it, is the word I want to use. And I think it does have, I don't anticipate that's going to be the case on Sunday at all.
Friday, Sean.
No, I think Friday. Hey, I'm looking at Sunday first. Sunday.
There's a game.
Friday is a nice little warm up. Friday is a nice little warm up for the crowd to show that they, they are there. And make it. Yeah. Well, it's difficult because there's more riding on Sunday's game than Friday. And I think the fans are looking ahead as a, perfect example there. Guilty at looking at Sunday before Friday. I want Friday done out of the way, and I want to get to cup final day. Plain and simple. And I think that maybe that might have settled in on Sunday. I don't think that, we haven't had a home game for 2 weeks, so crowd's first game back in a couple of weeks. You'd think that they might be a bit loud, but, it does get away from you a bit, and takes a bit of a while to sort of settle back in. And I did kind of feel bad that Lord said obviously the guys were expecting a bit more, which after the stretch we went on the road and we performed well, would have been nice for him to come up to a bit more of an atmosphere. But, sometimes you just have those nights where it doesn't get going. And I will say that it's been far worse. The atmosphere has been far worse in IAW, and some games in the BBT, even under this regime. So, Friday's a good warm up, and Sunday will be a whole different kettle of fish. Absolutely.
I completely derailed the conversation there, though, onto the fans. Aaron, your thoughts on the game? Are you expecting a big bounce back performance on the ice from the team?
I think we're in a comfortable position in the league now. I think it's pretty hard for us to, you know, it's not impossible. You know, we could slip up and we could ruin our league chances, but it's quite hard for us to do that. So I think Lord is going to want us to play hard. I think he is going to want us to win and do everything in possible to do that. But I do think that we'll be a little bit quiet, you know, not so many hits, and not just in case we don't take a penalty and, you know, miss Sunday's game. And I do think we'll be a little bit more quiet. I think this is going to be an odd one, but for me, I think our standing in the league, and I think how many games are left, and the fact that we're home and Manchester are not a big ice team, I would start Murdy, give Bounce a little bit of rest before Sunday, start Murdy, you know, box out and keep Manchester to the outside, limit shots and, you know, score a couple of goals. I think this game is one we can't afford to give points up on because of how many's left. You know, we got Edinburgh like the week after, and I think, you know, not being cocky, that's kind of a given. And I think we're in amateur stand, and we don't have to go all out for a W. If we do take a loss, we take a loss. But, you know, I'm more worried about Sunday for me, and I'd be surprised if the coach and the players don't feel the same way. I try to keep rest players as much as I can, maybe give Ruckus a little bit more ice time. Yeah, it's for me, it seems like an easier win than Warriors because Manchester don't sound like a big team second in the league. But, you know, they are, and they're there for a reason, but maybe I'm taking them lightly. But I do think our standing in the league is that solid, and I think we're that close that we could afford to drop another 2 points before one of the biggest game of the year.
I think I disagree. I would be absolutely amazed if Andrew did that. I really don't. And I'd also be amazed if the players in order more focused on Sunday. I think the one game at a time mantra that we always hear in the interviews. So I genuinely believe that is the way the club is working. And I think, you know, that's the case. I think if we're a few goals up, we might put Murdy in earlier than we normally would, with an eye on it. But, you know, Manchester have been to Cardiff once this year and they beat us 4-0. We've been to Manchester twice. We've lost once and we've won one in overtime. So, you know, we've only picked up 2 points to Manchester's 5 so far this year. And yeah, if this is, I think we've always had the conversation every year when we've been in the Challenge Cup final, would you rather take 2 points in the league or take the trophy? And I think every year we've said the points because we've been in the league. I think this is the first year where I would say I'd take the trophy because without question, because I think, as you said, there are enough points in the bag, but you know, I don't think the club will see it like that. And, you know, I wouldn't want them to. I think if you go out with that sort of mentality, sometimes it can get embedded in players. You know, I would love to see us go 3-0 up, ice third and fourth line, you know, top line minutes, get Moody in net. But I'd be surprised if we started him, and I wouldn't think it was necessarily right. I think Manchester are, you know, a massively high scoring team, and it would be almost an unfair situation to put a goalie with very little minutes in as well. Sean, what's your take on the game?
I think we'll just go with our normal lineup, as you said, Paul. I think we should limit the minutes a little bit. I know we got that day of rest in between, so that helps. I don't think that playing too defensive and boxing out is the best thing to do, purely because I don't, I think that invites an offensive onslaught from the other team. And I think you risk injuries a bit more as well, if guys are out there blocking shots, and playing that way defensively. Same as yourself, I think we should go out there, try and play our game, grab a couple, and then maybe look at putting Moody in at some stage. The other thing is, I don't like the idea of putting Bounds in cold on Sunday. I know it's only one game, but I'd still like him to have played a game at his iron and all that sort of thing. So,
if Mark Lewis is fit for me, and he's not,
I think
considering for the final, I would have him starting.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that that's when you take advantage of that body.
If Lewis is lined up to play in the final, that's a different matter. But
yeah, of course, yeah.
The team that's playing at the moment is going to be the team that ices in the final.
I'd be very surprised if we see a change to the lineup ready for the final. To be quite honest with you,
I think an injury is the only thing that would do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No disrespect to Mark Lewis at all. Obviously, he scored the game-winning goal. Correct me if I'm wrong. No, sorry, not the game-winning goal. The game-tying goal last year with a deflection in the Challenge Cup final. So, the team is just on such a roll at the moment that they're getting it done. And while they are, he has to fight and hope that someone slips up to get into the lineup. And that sucks for him. But yeah, I think we need to go out there, play our own game. You talk about, we have this conversation every year about the trophy and the points. If you could have one, which would you have? We're an organisation which wants both. And I like that. But we are that type of club. We don't have to sort of prioritise one or the other. We take it as it comes and go with it. And yeah, I want both. I want one more than the other, but obviously I want both. So yeah, let's just do it. Big weekend.
Let's just do it. And yeah, as you said, Belfast come in, and yeah, we've just discussed Devils are going to look for a bounce back from the result on Saturday. Aaron, got to be a major risk that Giants will be looking for the same. Is it? Is that something that concerns you, that they're going to use Sunday's result as their motivation?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I am pooping my pants. I'm not going to say they took it easy on us in any doubt, because they did go hard and they did, they didn't play terribly. I just think we capitalised on our chances more. But, they're hoping to get Rutherford back into the lineup, but I don't think we'll see Van der Meer again, which is, disappointing, because I think he's a good player. Well, it's not disappointing for us, but I do think he's a good player for them. I'm just really nervous for that game. I think they're going to think that they can come out and bully us a little. Not bully us, but, it is about. And, it's a cup final. The refs might be going a little bit easy, like laying off a little bit. So, but, yeah, nervous as hell. The way the double went over there, we nearly, well, I was just a nervous wreck all weekend when we came to game time, and that'll be the same Sunday. It's going to be, I'm just absolutely pooing myself, to be honest. I think we've had Belfast's number most, well, except for the one time at home. I think we've had their number twice, sorry, is it?
Yeah, they've done us after overtime and after penalties at home this year, so they've always been close.
The amount of games that they've gone to, like, overtime and penalty shots, the last time that happened in the Challenge Cup final, it didn't go our way, and, I'm just, come Sunday, I'm just going to be head in my hands all game, and, I don't know, I just, it's going to, I'll be honest, I don't think we're going to do it. This is the first time we're going to be negative this year. I think Belfast are going to, they're going to do us over on this one. They've got a big following coming down from Belfast. To see them. I know where it's basically a home game, but so when they've got them four rows, if it's them four rows that come over, they can be just as loud as some of our fans, and we're all a little bit spread out this year, so yeah, I'm nervous. Very, very nervous. If we play our game... If we play our game, no doubt, but... If Belfast play their game as well, you can't count them out, so...
It is lovely being in a position this year that... Knowing that if we play our very best, there's not really a team that, that can match that. Sean, are you expecting our very best on Sunday?
Well, I'd like to think so. So it's a cup final. It's our competition. What is it? Four finals in a row. We can make it three and four. Yeah. You know, trophies with this one. So it's a trophy which put us back on the map. It was our first one in a long time. Well, first one in a long time when we won it back in 2006. So, and then obviously under the new regime as well. So. It's you can't call it cup final. I'm 60-40 in favour of us. We've also got the home ice advantage, the extra day of rest. On our day, no one could beat us, point blank. But if Belfast are on their best, then they're in with a pretty good chance of taking that trophy back to Northern Ireland. And it's going to be a hard one. I think they're going to come at us hard. They obviously are done with the league championship. They want that back. I think they last won it in Portcurry.
2009,
yeah. So, you know, they haven't won the league for a while. They haven't won the Challenge Cup in, you know, nearly 10 years. So, yeah, they're going to want to take...
3 or 4 years without a trophy as well, I believe. All together.
So, Adam Keefe's going to want to make a marker in his first year of coach. He's going to want to win a championship. And I'm excited. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be tough, without a doubt, as are all the games in this league. You can't take anyone lightly. I don't think that we can account for what happened on Sunday as we can't take anything from that as to what will happen this Sunday, because it's just a one-off game. It's a cup final. That's the beauty of it. We're all nervous. Belfast fans are nervous. And because, you know, that's the beauty of the Challenge Cup. And one reason why I love it so much is, you know, you lose a league game, you can make it up the week after. The Challenge Cup final isn't forgiven. You lose in the final, that's it. You can't, you know, it's all over. And it's exciting. I love a one-off final. I think it's one of the best things the league have done for, you know, the structure of a competition in such a long time, because those nerves are horrible, but it's what makes sport so fun and why we do what we do. So I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, thanks for all that. And you mentioning sort of Keith making a marker, coaching his first year, sort of coming up a little bit short in the league and going into a Challenge Cup final. It sounds horribly familiar.
Going away to the home to the team with the home ice advantage. Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Jesus, I didn't even put that bit on it. I've lost all optimism for the fates have aligned. And I think it's going to be a really good game. I think, let's forget Sunday, I think the way that double header went, you know, two end-to-end games against two very good teams and both being very tight, I'm fully expecting to see a repeat of that on the ice on Sunday. And yeah, it'll be an excellent showpiece if that happens. And let's just hope that however many goals in it are in favour of the team in, I very nearly said the team in red, but I believe that's going to be Belfast. So, if it is, the team in black. So that's the week that's coming. What a week it's going to be. So make sure you send us your thoughts, send us your Armites. Please do send us some more burning questions. An excellent selection we had this week. Really enjoyed talking through all of them. So thank you to everyone who submitted. And yeah, just get your thinking caps back on and get those into us. We've gone a little bit longer. Hopefully you've been able to hear it all this week. But thank you for listening. And for now, that is your Red Army Roundup. The devil inside. Every single one of us, the devil inside.